Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 9th of November, 2012. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Tom and Vara Williams. Your readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. Now, this week's announcements. And first, a reminder that Sunday, the 11th of November, is Remembrance Day, and the national two-minute silence will take place at 11 a.m. Now, here are several events in and around Winchester. On Thursday, the 15th of November, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, will switch on the Christmas lights in the Broadway at 6 p.m. Also on Thursday, the 15th of November, at 7:30 p.m. in Winchester Cathedral, there's a performance of Benjamin Britten's War Requiem. Further details and tickets about this event can be obtained by telephoning 01962 857 257. That's 01962 857 257. On Friday, the 16th of November, Winchester Area Access for All is holding a forum for highlighting difficulties, especially for those with disabilities, when accessing facilities in and around Winchester. This is your chance to ask a panel of experts about transport, policing, health services, etc. The event will be from 2 till 4 p.m. at the Pastoral Centre, St Peter's Church, Jory Street, Winchester. On Thursday, the 22nd of November, the Christmas market will open in the Cathedral Close, preceded by a torchlight procession from the Great Hall, beginning at 6 p.m. and will stay open until the 23rd of December. And on the same day, the open-air ice rink will open and will be operative until the 6th of January. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 9th of November, at 7:11 a.m. and begins at 4:28 p.m. On Wednesday the 14th of November, it ends at 7:22 a.m. and begins at 4:19 p.m. The main headlines this week are: Trust homing in on site for new hospital, wind farm ban labelled bonkers, and Round Table celebrates a record breaker. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Margot?
Trust homing in on site for new hospital. Health chiefs want to build a new £70 million hospital to include a state-of-the-art cancer treatment centre in an area north of Winchester, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. While bosses at the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust stress no site has yet been identified, they are looking to build the specialist emergency hospital in an area of land encircled by the A34, the A303 and the M3. Now, this includes Mitchell Dever, Mitchell Dever Station, Sutton Scotney, Kingsworthy and South Wanston. The aim is to have a new hospital up and running within the next 5 years. The news comes as the Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Basingstoke Hospital and Andover War Memorial Hospital, has launched a separate campaign to raise £5 million to build the groundbreaking cancer unit. Excuse me. Medics behind the ambitious scheme, previously reported in the Chronicle in February, say the support of local people is key to the campaign's success. Merv Rees, Clinical Director of Surgery at the Trust and Consultant Surgeon, is leading the initiative. He said, "Cancer is something which touches almost every single household in some way. The centre is something our team are really passionate about, and we want local people in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover to get behind it. We want to create a centre with people, in which people will walk into and say, wow." Mr. Rees added, "No matter how big or how small each fundraising event is, it all adds up. It all helps to spread the word and raise money. The centre, which it is hoped would open in 3 years, will offer vital treatments such as radiotherapy, alongside palliative care and more general support, including hair care, beauty treatments, financial and employment advice. This cancer centre will cost £18 million to build, £13 million coming from the Trust, with a campaign team hoping the remaining £5 million will be found through the generosity of the public. The Trust hopes to raise the £13 million through a foundation trust financing facility rather than through the controversial private finance initiative. Meanwhile, the main hospital will treat thousands of critically ill patients from Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover, including trauma injuries, heart attack victims and strokes. Proposals also include a helipad. Less serious A&E patients will go to Winchester's RHCH and Basingstoke's North Hampshire Hospital. The new hospital would have between 200 and 300 beds, around 10% of which would be intensive care and 8 operating theatres. The plan is to have specialist A&E consultants, CT and MRI scanners working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It is estimated it will be used to treat about 75,000 patients a year, 50% of those currently treated at the three hospital sites. Winchester MP Steve Bryan has cautiously welcomed the plans. He said, "If the new trust can deliver a world-class facility, combining acute care and specialist cancer treatment that gives my constituents the best possible chance when they fall ill, that is more than welcome. But the Trust are acutely aware that it goes hand in hand with high-quality outpatient services, emergency care, and the full range of maternity services at the RHCH." Douglas Patterson, chairman of the Diva Society, said, "We know very little about this because it has only been a rumour up until now. The Diva Society supports appropriate and responsible development in our area. There is a clear difference between this sort of proposal and more opportunistic developments driven by private gain of the type we have been fighting recently, like EDF's plans for a wind farm, the waste plant, and proposed new town. We would hope to see a sensitive and well-designed development that did not harm the rural character of the area. We recognise our responsibility if there is a community need for the hospital and cancer centre to accommodate." But he warned, "This area is highly valued because of the countryside and landscape, but it is under constant pressure from development. For more information about the cancer centre or how to get involved in fundraising, call 01256 360 419. I'll repeat it. 01256 360 419.
Wind farm ban labelled bonkers. County Council won't allow them on its land. Plans for a blanket ban on wind farms on council land in Hampshire have been condemned as simply bonkers. Tory council chiefs have said while the benefits of providing clean, renewable energy are recognised, there are adverse impacts on the landscape. A council report said there would be no impact on climate change. The final decision to ban wind farms and large turbines will be made by council leader Ken Thornber on January the 24th as executive member for policy and resources. A council spokesman said, "The leader will report his decision to the first full council after that." But Councillor Keith House, leader of the Liberal Democrat opposition group, said the decision should be made after a full council debate. Councillor House said, "Hampshire Conservatives' position on this is quite simply bonkers. Would they rather see a nuclear power station at Fawley or turbines in appropriate sites? Renewable energy is an essential part of future energy security. A blanket ban is irresponsible and, frankly, stupid." Energy companies pay landowners large sums to lease their land for turbines, cash that could be spent on services and offset some of the £1.4 million green tax the council has been hit with for carbon emissions. The local authority is a major landowner with tenant farms, country parks and other land. Liberal Democrat environment spokesman Councillor Adam Carew said, "We wouldn't wish to see wind farms on areas of outstanding beauty or sites of special scientific interest, but an absolute ban is ludicrous." Campaigners from Winchester Action on Climate Change, that's WINAC, have also condemned the move, saying it is, quote, astonishing for the council to claim it will have no impact on climate change. They say replacing electricity from burning fossil fuels with renewable energy, such as wind farms, is one of the best ways to cut carbon emissions. They have also accused the local authority of, quote, a cynical ploy to look good to NIMBYs and climate change deniers. Members are being urged to write letters of protest to the council. In a statement, Deputy Leader and Environment Chief Mel Kendall said, "We are completely signed up to the benefits of low carbon energy, but believe that at the present moment, large-scale wind turbines on our land do not provide a sufficient benefit to justify the loss of Hampshire's most prized and undeveloped countryside." The council said wind farms would be urbanisation of the landscape and lead to loss of tranquillity. Councillor Alan Weeks, the sole Green on the county council, said, "There are a lot of worse eyesores. On the horizon, they can look quite spectacular, and unlike the Spinnaker Tower in Portsmouth, they generate electricity." The policy won't affect planning applications for wind farms on private land, such as the one at Bullington, north of Winchester, as city and district councils, not Hampshire, are the decision-making bodies.
Roundtable celebrates a record breaker. Winchester's annual fireworks celebrations went off with a record-breaking bang last weekend. Around 26,000 people flocked to the city to see the showpiece event at North Walls Recreation Ground. Organisers Winchester Roundtable promised the 54th annual event would be bigger and better than ever before, and it didn't disappoint. It featured more fireworks and a bigger bonfire than previous years, plus music for the first time in 5 years. It brought in a record revenue of £69,000, although profit was down at around £30,000 because of highest ever costs of £38,000. Roundtable Bonfire Committee Chairman Glenn Taylor said he was thrilled with the result. He said, "We were a bit restricted this year because of extra health and safety requirements, so our expenses were up and we had to be very careful. My target was £70,000, but we are very, very happy with the result. It means we should be able to give £30,000 to charity. Roundtable is not about huge donations. What we'd like to do is to make as much of a difference to as many local charities as possible, where small grants of £250 to £1,000 can make that difference." Mr. Taylor said the night had been a complete success. "There was so much magic in the air, it fully justified using the themes from Harry Potter and Star Wars films. Visitors were asked to give generously, with proceeds from the event going to several groups and charities like Winnell Rock School and the Joe Glover Trust. This year's event also featured more volunteers than ever before, with 275 people making sure things ran smoothly. The majestic bonfire in the middle of the park was made from 2 miles of fencing, 140 tons of wooden pallets, and 7,000 nails. Temporary bridges were also brought in to help people move safely in and out of the park. The gloss was taken off the success of the event on Sunday morning after vandalism on the site." Mr. Taylor added, "The vandalism has marred the event a bit. Our metal fences were damaged and thrown into the river, and the toilets were turned over.
To find that damage was heartbreaking, and it is going to cost us thousands. These nights were not to be sustainable if we have to spend that sort of money on damage. Anyone with information on the damage should contact Hampshire Police or Roundtable.
That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Bushby, Sandra Elizabeth Bushby, suddenly in Singapore, aged 64. Butcher, Leonard Arthur Butcher, aged 88, in hospital. Circuit, Janet Francis Circuit, at home, aged 81. Cunningham, Glenn Cunningham, aged 56, after a long illness. Dean, Sheila Dean, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 80. Dickon, Beryl Isabel Dickon, peacefully in hospital, aged 89. Gibbs, Hazel Joan Gibbs. Harmer, Michael John Harmer, at home after a long illness, aged 61. Hill, Greta Hill, peacefully, aged 85. Knight, Douglas Knight, peacefully, aged 84. Renshaw, Jessie Doreen Renshaw, peacefully at Brendan Care, aged 92. Simmons, Donald James Simmons, suddenly and unexpectedly at Pax Hill Care Home, Bentley, aged 85. And Sullivan, Babs Sullivan, peacefully aged 83. Christian comment this week is read by Margot. Thank you, Margot.
And it is written by Canon Rowley Ream, and he's entitled it Stigmatised by Society. It sometimes puzzles me why stigma surrounds particular human limitations. Hearing loss causes embarrassment, though no one bats an eyelid at the sight of someone wearing glasses. This was brought home to me recently when offering the use of a hearing loop to the audience of Winchester Chronicles of Light. "I'm not deaf yet," said one person indignantly, though my favourite reply was, "I don't need the loo." The difference in attitude applies especially to physical and mental health. If someone is troubled by migraine, then everyone understands, while a bout of reactive depression or stress can be met by concern for a person's total well-being or suitability for a job. This difference reflects our own sense of self. While we experience ourselves through and in our bodies, we do not identify ourselves totally with them. We notice ourselves growing older, but we still feel young inside. When others die, we still use the language of souls to express the essential non-bodily self which may survive death. We think of the soul as the engine of the self. A car with dents on the bodywork is still a sound car, while a car making ominous sounds from the bonnet can't be trusted. Mental discomfort or illness is feared as a potential breakdown, and so hidden away by the sufferer and stigmatised by society. The fear at the root of the problem can be tackled, however. Christians believe that God wants to save the whole person. This means much more than the survival of a soul. It is the resurrection of the body. Our fragile minds, which we realise today are simply the brainy dimension of our body, need saving by God. They're not beyond redemption. The hopes of resurrection enables us to face the sheer, frightening complexity of our minds. There is so much to go wrong, and often little we can do to heal it. And when things go really wrong, the whole person can be lost to us, even if outwardly the body remains intact. The faith that no one can be lost to God, nor to those who hold hope for them, helps us not to fear. And this sort of tenacious caring and believing is a healing force for those who suffer from mental illness. We all have a role in combating the social stigma that says we are only as human as far as our mental function allows. To God, the brain is just one working part of the body, which he will transform and save.
And now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by John. Thank you, John.
This one is about bringing back weekly bin collections, and it's from Michael Hall. Sir, as a resident of North Walls, I am writing in connection with the reduction in the refuse collection service offered by Winchester City Council. North Walls has several multi-occupancy flats and houses, and as an example, our next-door neighbours either side are students. My concern is that the bins, including ours, are regularly used for what can only be described as legalised fly-tipping. We get rubbish from passers-by, including late-night takeaway refuse, and from other households who, once their bin is full, dump it in ours and that of other households. As with many nearby houses in many different streets, there is no side access to our property. The bins are out in the street, so the problem extends further than just one street in the city centre. The council has now announced that overfilled bins will have the excess removed and left behind. A friendly bin man told us he wouldn't be able to help us in the future where the bin is overfull. There is a problem along Upper Brook Street and Parchment Street with rats. I can't believe the council wishes to disregard its public health obligations and leave bags of rubbish on the street. In the summer, there were bags left in the street which were not collected for weeks. We reluctantly had to deal with this rotting rubbish ourselves. We are careful recyclers and already visit the recycling centre at Bar End fairly regularly. I object strongly to the notion that other people's rubbish should suddenly be my concern, and that I should take it to the tip for them or for the council's benefit, lest it be left rotting outside my house. As Winchester sees itself and markets itself as a city of such heritage, does it really want to show the image of rotting bin bags in the street in the city centre? As neighbouring councils such as Basingstoke and Southampton have reverted back to weekly collections, I look forward to Winchester following suit. Michael Hall, North Walls, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Daphne. Dear, what will it take for them to clean our street? Sir, I should like to call upon you to help through your pages to get Winchester City Council to send someone down to Fairdown Close to clean the road and pavement. I have been trying since June the 13th to get something done about clearing the leaves, the pine needles and the sludge which over the months has settled in the gutter and is preventing the water from running away into our one drain. I have telephoned and written. I have posted a message on Fix My Street and I have called in at the council offices to ask that this work be carried out, and still nothing has been done. Although Alsford Road, which runs parallel to Fairdown Close, is swept on a regular basis, the sweeper has not put in an appearance in our close since January of this year, after I made several phone calls to ask that it be done. On one occasion, I spent 28 minutes being passed from one department to another in an attempt to find out how often Fairdown Close is supposed to be swept, according to the rotor, only to be told that there are no rotors for street cleaning anymore. When I asked how the system works, I was told that it is up to good people like yourself to ring in and request that the work is carried out. I did as the gentleman on the phone suggested, and much more, and it didn't work. Daphne Dear, Fairdown Close, Winchester.
Support New Sports Centre Initiative, says Claire May. Sir, I understand that you recently ran an article regarding the possible new leisure centre at Bar End, and I wanted to add my voice of support to this as a rural resident who would also like to benefit from new facilities. It's not just the townies that want a good facility for themselves or their children. Living outside of the town, we also want to use the facilities. But the nightmarish one-way system around Winchester is such a deterrent, particularly when you consider the very limited parking available. I would consider it very short-sighted of the Winchester City Council if they did not review plans seriously to work with a steering group and create a facility that will serve the county for years to come. Claire May, the Dean, Ropley.
Learn from Guildford, says Peter Murphy. Sir, I read that a new sports centre at Bar End is being considered for Winchester. That was in the Chronicle October 25th. So, maybe consult the Surrey Sports Park in Guildford to see what they have achieved on a broadly similar site. Peter Murphy, Barron Place, Basingstoke.
And Christopher Gordon, voters taken for granted again. Sir, David Selby is not the only one planning to make a point of spoiling his ballot paper on November the 15th in the forthcoming Police and Crime Commissioner election. He describes this as the mildest of protests, but actually, if it were to be done in substantial numbers across the country, it would amount to a powerful democratic statement against this latest imposed American gimmick, and in the absence of any proper public debate on a matter of great importance. It's interesting that in order to try and force it upon an unprepared population, the Tories in government are relaxed about using a version of the voting system they very recently claimed would be too complicated for the idiot UK electorate to understand in the AV referendum just a matter of months ago. Given that the leaflet distributed by local electoral services includes nothing about any quorum of registered votes that would legitimise a result, I checked with Winchester City Council to ascertain whether my suspicions were correct. They very quickly confirmed back to me that the only criterion is for the successful candidate to have over 50% of the valid votes cast in their favour. So there is no minimum threshold that has to be reached. This is a democratic farce within a process that has now turned into a party political contest. Independent commissioners, you have to be joking. In this area, there are, I understand, to be six candidates, but not a single leaflet has been delivered to me. Assuming, say, a 20% poll, possibly an overgenerous estimate, with 5% or more of those having deliberately spoiled their ballots in protest at a half-baked process we were never consulted about, I doubt even the Prime Minister, using his honed PR skills, could claim that a winning candidate on just 4% or whatever of the registered local electorate would have a shred of democratic legitimacy in preference to the existing, albeit imperfect, law and order accountability arrangements. It is little wonder that the number and proportion of voters in the UK who do not bother to make use of their ballots is increasing. But it is really bad for democracy and a betrayal of those who fought for universal suffrage. Reinforce democracy by taking the trouble to register your disgust at how we are being taken for granted yet again. Christopher Gordon, Corns Close, Winchester.
Ken Leslie says, who approved an AV vote? Sir, I am astounded to note that the Electoral Commission is using an alternative vote system for the election of police and crime commissioners. This system was massively rejected at the recent referendum, and a majority of us wish never to see it again. I wonder which department authorised this. Ken Leslie, Constable's Gate, Winchester.
Adrian Bates, chairman of Mitchell Dever Action Group, says rural Hants is no place for an incinerator. Sir, Chris White of Indigo Public Affairs Limited took issue with you. Letters, October the 25th. This technology is not incineration. Over your use of that word in a report about a planning application by his client Clean Power Properties Limited for a waste treatment plant at Mitchell Dever Station. Wikipedia states, quote, incineration with energy recovery is one of several waste-to-energy technologies, such as pyrolysis, unquote, which Clean Power's proposed plant would use. Presumably, this is why their application confirms that waste treatment would be in accordance with the EU's Waste Incineration Directive. The many local residents who are supporting Mitchell Dever Action Group and the Deva Society in opposing the planning application are doing so because, regardless of the statements by Clean Power and their public affairs consultants Indigo, there is simply no requirement for a refuse incinerating power station in rural mid-Hampshire in an area where there is no production of waste to fuel it. It is also contrary to the guidelines laid out by Hampshire County Council in their waste and minerals plans. Waste treatment projects of this nature are being proposed nationwide, driven by taxpayer-funded subsidies. In fact, three large plants already exist in Hampshire, close to major conurbations, where they should be. If extra capacity is required, one of these would surely be the sensible location. That's from Adrian Bates, chairman of the Mitchell Dever Action Group, Church Street, Mitchell Dever.
From E. Crawley, ticket office can't cope with demand. Sir, Dr. Lewis, Chronicle Letters, November the 1st, writes for the poor upkeep of the railway station car park at Winchester. May I record an agonised grouse at the inability of the ticket office to cope with public demand. Frequently only one window is open for business. Buying tickets in advance is really no longer an option at Winchester Station, as such tickets often need discussion and face-to-face contact, meaning that those in the queue, often 10 or 12 people, have even longer to wait and may miss their train. Not everyone is on the internet and able to purchase their tickets in this way. Twice over recent months, I have travelled by bus to Southampton and had no queue for tickets at all. Why not bring back the popular and much-needed travel office at the railway station, or at least open two or three windows and indicate which one would best deal with advance bookings? E. Crawley, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
Trevor Moss says, bandstands bring people into town. Sir, as a born and bred Wintonian, now living in the Cotswolds, I have only recently seen the letter on endorsement of a mobile bandstand for Winchester. As a regular performer in brass bands, may I please add a viewpoint? To enter into the purchase of a mobile bandstand and associated costs of erection, storage and transport, may I suggest another consideration based on years of playing at different bandstands as part of various councils' summer programmes, including Malvern, Cheltenham and Ross-on-Wye. Winchester should promote a summer programme at a chosen site, only having to provide a hard standing of sufficient size to accommodate a band. Suggestions for location include North Walls, Abbey Gardens, or even around the square and cathedral area. Ensure it is well advertised and there are catering facilities nearby, and assess at the end of the season. If interest has not been sufficient to encourage participation the next year, consider a different location. If the interest is sufficient, then a more permanent facility can be considered and create a Winchester tradition that will attract people from a considerable area. People will attend if they know the event is on. I play at Malvern every year, and we have seen crowds of several hundred when the weather is good. Families bring their own chairs and picnics, but this has been built up over a few years. It's a great event, usually every week or fortnight in summer, and has a relatively small cost to the council. People enjoy the entertainment, and councils are congratulated for providing community events that do not cost the earth, while the encouragement of musicians can only benefit the area as a whole. It is worth considering. Trevor Moss, High Street, Cam, Gloucestershire.
And that concludes the letters. If you wish to contact Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we glance to the past, and the news from 200 years ago is read by John. Thank you, John.
This is 1812, and we have two pieces. The first piece is this: the monthly meeting of the members of the Winchester Conservative Working Men's Association was held on Monday evening, when an interesting address on current politics was given by Mr. F.J. Patmore of the Hants and Isle of Wight Division of the National Association of Conservative and Liberal Unionist Associations. Mr. Patmore's address opened with a brief reference to the war in the East, and he subsequently proceeded to deal with the National Insurance Act, followed by a review of the objections to Home Rule. And the second piece, Winchester County Bench. Thomas Moser, alias Williams, was charged with stealing potatoes, value 2 shillings, the property of Charlotte Perrett of Oslebury. George Masterman, dairyman, proved seeing the prisoner go in the direction of the barn on Monday morning, and 10 minutes later he noticed him dragging a bag with something heavy in it towards a wood.
And there are two items from 100 years ago, that is in 1912. Quebec. Sir John Prevost issued a proclamation on the 10th of September ordering all subjects of the United States to quit Nova Scotia on or before the 15th of October and prohibiting any British subject to proceed to the United States without his special license. General Brock was in the vicinity of the fall of Niagara and was proceeding against the fort of that name with the full confidence of success. And secondly, the pillaging system which the French politicians call making war support war appears to have produced in Russia a renewal of the horrible scenes of 1810 in Portugal. Whole villages have been plundered and burnt, and the inhabitants have either barbarously murdered or turned out homeless to starve with cold and hunger.
50 years ago, 1962, also two items, and the first says, on being told that yet another 2 tins of canned meat delivered to a primary school in their district had had to be condemned, members of Andover Rural District Council's General Purposes Committee decided to write to the County Education Authority expressing concern. They had heard the council's senior public health officer state that 2 tins of luncheon meat opened at Shipton Bellinger Primary School showed considerable discolouring and had had to be condemned. And the second, a very old established Winchester fashion house has recently been given a new look and extended in a way which will greatly benefit its customers. The demolition of old cottages in Staple Garden at the rear of the Theatre Royal Picture House has made it possible for Murray's on the corner of City Road and Jury Street to carry out a very considerable extension to their fashion showrooms.
And finally, from the files of the Chronicle, are 25 years ago, 1987, two little pieces. Farmers and landowners are being urged to cooperate with Hampshire County Council on the massive task of clearing felled trees and debris from highways throughout the county. Although nearly all Hampshire's roads are now open to traffic, many highway verges are still obstructed with tree trunks and branches. The work is likely to take many months to complete, and the cost will run into hundreds of thousands of pounds. And then this. Traffic speeding through Hampshire villages is causing so much concern that parish councils are currently pleading for more than 120 areas of speed restriction within their boundaries. The full extent of anxiety over traffic problems on rural roads was vividly revealed in a map compiled by the County Council's Traffic Manager and Accident Investigation Officer.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Margaret and will be followed by first person read by John. Thank you, Margaret.
A bonfire event brings out best in volunteers. Every year, a small group of men organise the biggest single community event in Winchester. The firework display put on by Winchester Roundtable has raised some £30,000 clear profit after 26,000 people packed into North Walls Park on Saturday. The proceeds will go to the Cash for Causes programme and other grant-giving initiatives to local charities. Roundtable's tireless and continued commitment to the event should not be taken for granted, and it seems it isn't. Last year, there were around 180 volunteers helping to sell programmes door-to-door, shaking buckets on the night or clearing up afterwards. This time, the Roundtable reports some 275 young and old helped out, and they too should be congratulated. The Hampshire Chronicle is throwing its weight behind the Welcome campaign to build a state-of-the-art £18 million cancer treatment centre to the north of Winchester. It is part of an ambitious plan for a new £70 million hospital. However, it is essential that high-quality outpatient services, A&E and maternity services at the RHCH are not put at risk in the longer term when the new facility is eventually built.
And first person this week is written by George Hayter. The title is, Has This Dog Had Its Day? The black boy in Wharf Hill, Winchester, has all the qualities of a great boozer, including memorable decor and magical atmosphere. It's a pub that Winchester can be proud of. It thrives off the tourist trail and hundreds of yards from the city centre. It's hidden off Bar End Road. The obscure location has not stopped this very local pub coming to the attention of the national press, with the staid Daily Telegraph recommending the offbeat hostelry as a gem of a pub. An extraordinary, charming labyrinth of rooms is crammed with curios such as bottles and keys, ammeters and blowtorches. There's an entire library and even an assemblage of eyeballs. The beer is as celebrated as the humorous ornamentation, and tasty fat sandwiches and generous piles of chips are dispensed at slim prices. But I do have one criticism of this otherwise outstanding establishment. My one black mark for the black boy is something that has dogged its interior for years. It's something that reveals a heartless, gutless, and probably spineless aspect of the decorative scheme, and it's clear to most observers that the problem is more than skin deep. Among the curios is something which, for sensitive types, could be the stuff of nightmares. With this aspect of the interior, I think the management has simply been barking up the wrong tree, and I'm convinced there is a grave need for a discreet solution. What I'm suggesting is that one of the exhibits is lifeless and in poor taste, and that action should be taken to lay this matter to rest once and for all. How has this dogged difficulty arisen? Like a pub cat curled up on a chair, most dogs add a homely touch to licensed premises. Of course, breed is important. A Rottweiler or an Alsatian may not appear as welcoming as a Golden Lab or a Jolly Mongrel. But the issue at the Black Boy is not the breed of the dog lying in the front bar, but the animal's state of health. It's dead. And close examination reveals that there is less to the departed creature than meets the eye. The poor animal, comfortably curled up, but clearly falling apart, put me in mind of a tale of cruelty. The state of its feet certainly gave me pause for thought. Britain claims to be a nation of animal lovers, but taxidermy gives that a hollow ring. The dog isn't the only deceased creature here, with a stuffed baboon and a preserved bear also said to be among the bric-a-brac. Fair enough. But I'm not entirely joking when I say that many drinkers these days may not see the funny side of a taxidermic exhibit in the form of man's best friend, even if it is inside one of the best pubs in Hampshire.
Now to the general news, and we begin with a reminder that on Thursday next, the 15th of November, there are the first elections for the new post of Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The Commissioner will have power to hire and fire the Chief Constable and set budgets. He or she will be responsible for 3,470 police officers in the two counties, with a budget of £305 million each year. There are six candidates who have set out their case for being elected in the Hampshire Chronicle, and here they are. First, Margot.
David Goodall from Southampton, who is a Liberal Democrat. Ignoring the budget, candidates talk about catching criminals, more police, and zero tolerance. Hampshire's Conservatives let us down. Their vote meant further cuts to the police budget, despite the Chief Constable's warnings of 100 fewer officers. I will make the difference. As a project manager, I know about stopping wasteful spending and performing jobs effectively. As a local councillor, I know the importance of listening and setting police objectives that you want. I will prioritise neighbourhood policing. It means more officers on your street and less crime. I will ensure victims and witnesses get the support they need. I will focus on reducing reoffending with improved rehabilitation schemes that include restorative justice to help victims. I will achieve this with better partnership, working between the police, councils, statutory and voluntary agencies. With Labour and UKIP running a poor third across Hampshire, it's either my effective experience or the Conservative.
Simon Hayes is an independent candidate from Bishop's Waltham. I'm chairman of Crime Stoppers Hampshire and Isle of Wight, and past chairman of the Hampshire Police Authority. I work as a criminologist to prevent reoffending by individuals who have offended because of an addiction. I'm standing as an independent candidate because the areas of responsibility within the remit of the PCC should not be subject to party political influence. The PCC can serve only one master. That must be the people of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, not Westminster. It will be vital that the appointment of the new Chief Constable is not influenced from Westminster. I believe in inclusion, community cooperation and consultation. While ensuring protection from serious and organised crime, I want to develop the role of the police away from simply incident-driven policing towards working with others to address the levels of reoffending and prevent crime in the first place.
Don Gerard from Petersfield, the Justice and Anti-Corruption Party. Mr. Gerard set out his aims in a manifesto on his party's website. He wrote, "In 2010, I co-founded the Justice and Anti-Corruption Party, an independent party for the purpose of investigating and exposing corruption in public life and obtaining justice for the victims of abuse of power. That experience reinforced my belief that the newly elected PCCs should be independent of major political party to prevent political bias in the criminal justice system. I am the only truly independent candidate running for PCC in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, as all other candidates are either a representative of a major political party or have represented a major political party in the recent past." He added he would not take a salary and would focus on antisocial behaviour, drugs, gun crime, fraud, child abuse and corruption.
Michael Mates from Winchester, a Conservative. Michael Mates, aged 78, beat six candidates to become the Conservative choice for the new role. The former MP, who represented East Hampshire at Westminster between 1983 and 2010, said he would draw on his experience as a Northern Ireland minister in John Major's government. He said, "I had some responsibility for the Royal Ulster Constabulary, and I had to oversee them. And I thought if I could do it in Northern Ireland, I could do it in Hampshire." He said that if elected, he would look at how Hampshire can share resources with neighbouring forces. Mr. Mates added his priorities would be all crimes of violence, all crimes involving alcohol and drugs, and rural crime. He said, "To achieve this in difficult times, there must be more efficient use of scarce resources, with the accent on getting experienced, well-trained officers out of offices and in touch with the public."
Jackie Raymond, who is a Labour candidate from Southampton, says, "I am standing on my record as the best person to reduce crime and stand up for Hampshire against the Tory Lib Dem cuts to the police. I was a member of the Hampshire Police Authority for 15 years and chair for the last six. I was unanimously re-elected as chair five times. I have appointed two chief constables in my time and understand what is needed to deliver this role. I'm no ordinary politician. I have previously been national chair of a tenants' rights organisation, a school governor and pub landlady, as well as managing retail businesses. I am a mother and grandmother, born in Hampshire, with an understanding of the issues that matter. My priorities are supporting frontline policing, opposing police cuts and tackling antisocial behaviour and crime. I understand rural and urban issues, and I will work with local people, listening to them. I am the only candidate with on-the-job knowledge and experience."
Stephen West from Tadley is the UKIP candidate. Councillor Stephen West, who represents the Tadley Central Ward at Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council, says on his website that he will draw on his 12 years' experience as a special constabulary officer. "As your Police and Crime Commissioner, I will tackle crime at its source with zero tolerance of antisocial behaviour and protect the vulnerable. Causing harassment, damage to property and verbally abusing people is not just antisocial, it is a criminal offence. Those found to be behaving in a threatening way or intimidating others will be arrested. Antisocial behaviour is often alcohol-related. Shops and bars that serve alcohol to people who are already drunk or who are underage should lose their licence." Councillor West said he will not reduce frontline police numbers, will freeze council tax police precept, reduce overall crime figures, support victims of crime and cut speed cameras.
And now we move on to the other items of general news. Thank you, Margot.
The light fantastic at the cathedral. It turned Winchester Cathedral into a spectacular stage of sound and light. Chronicles of Light finished its sell-out run in Winchester after thrilling audiences from around the country. Cathedral bosses declined to confirm how much the show made, but said it had turned a profit that would be spent on improving its sound and lighting. Canon Rowley Ream, executive producer of the show, said, "It was an amazing success, and I hope it widens the affection the public holds for the cathedral. It was a risk, and we needed to do well to break even. But we didn't do this to make a profit. We knew the risks, but the success will help us with what we want to do in the future for the cathedral, particularly with the sound and lighting. Everyone had a different view of the show, but the majority of people I saw leaving came out with huge smiles, and the word people said more than any other was brilliant. We had great contributions from celebrities and a fantastic cast, many local young actors who put in a great effort over weeks of rehearsals and performances." He added he was pleased the show had very few technical problems, although backup plans were in place. A cathedral spokesman added, "It's too early to say exactly how well we have done financially, but we sold out all 9,500 tickets for the shows. It was certainly a success in terms of the business plan." Some audience members who particularly enjoyed the show were residents of White Wings House in Denmead, members of Wickham Over 60's Thursday Club, and members of Age UK's Lunch Club, who were guests of the City Council at a showing. They were accompanied by ward councillors Patricia Stallard and Angela Clear, while transport was supplied by Winchester Area Community Action. Councillor Stallard, portfolio holder for Communities, Culture and Sport, said the guests could not stop talking about the event all the way home. Some of the Denmead residents couldn't remember the last time they had been in Winchester and had never seen Winchester Cathedral before, and were just blown away by the whole evening.
Field of Remembrance. The green at Winchester Cathedral came to a standstill at the annual opening of the Field of Remembrance. On Tuesday, former servicemen stood to attention as the last post echoed through the outer close, with members of the public also stopping to pay their respects. The Reverend Canon Michael St. John Channell, precentor of Winchester Cathedral, began proceedings with a dedication followed by prayers. John Harper, 68, of Westman Road, who served in the Royal Green Jackets, said, "These events are important because these gentlemen here all have stories to tell, and when they pass away, their stories go with them. The young people need to know." Winchester Deputy Mayor Ernest Jeffs laid a remembrance wreath at the ceremony. He said, "I think it's very, very important. These guys gave their lives for us, and today we have freedom and freedom of speech because of them." Derek Green, Winchester Branch Chairman of the Royal British Legion, said, "We always dedicate the garden at this time of year so that people can put their crosses in to remember those who fell." Winchester Cathedral will be holding a special service for the Green Jackets at 9:10 a.m. this Sunday, November the 11th. A public service starts at 10 a.m, immediately followed by a wreath laying at the memorial outside. St. Peter's Church in Jury Street will hold 2-minute silences at all 7 of its services over Saturday and Sunday. A parade begins in Bishop's Waltham at 10 a.m. in Basingwell Street, marching to St. Peter's Church for a service at 10:50 a.m. Residents in Hursley will gather at All Saints Church at 10:50 a.m. before walking to the War Memorial on the A3090 road. Parts of the road will be closed temporarily from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. to ensure public safety. Meanwhile, 2 services will be held in Kingsworthy, 10 a.m. at St. Mary's Church and 11:15 a.m. at St. Swithin's Church. St. John's Church in Alsford is holding a Royal British Legion Remembrance Service at 10:45 a.m, following a family service at 9:30 a.m.
Kicking up a stink over sewage leaks, residents angry after gardens are flooded. People in Kingsworthy have hit out at Southern Water after sewage flooded private gardens on 3 occasions in the past 3 months. Sylvia Robinson, 78, of North Road, fears her garden will be ruined after it was flooded on August the 11th, September the 4th, and as recently as Monday, October the 28th. She said, "The big drain in the alleyway, the other side of my garden, overflows and it all comes through a manhole. It's heartbreaking, quite honestly, and this time it brought a few tears to my eyes. This last year I have not been able to do much in my back garden, but I have some beautiful roses there. This does not give me any incentive to do anything with it because the grass is inundated with sewage." Steve Mundy, 45, a chef, also of North Road, added, "It's the first time it's happened to me, but it's horrible. There are condoms and all sorts turning up in my garden. I live with my 85-year-old mother-in-law, who is blind, and she does not need to be dealing with this. Mrs. Robinson said Southern Water had responded quickly each time to unblock the drain and remove the waste, but were not tackling the cause of the problems. She said, nobody is rectifying the situation. Southern Water says it's happening because people are putting the wrong things down the toilet. She has been supported by Ward Councillor Robert Johnston and County Councillor Jackie Porter. Councillor Porter said, I have written to the Director of Public Health about this. We need to tackle this as a real issue. We are not living in Victorian times. We are living in the 21st century, and it is ridiculous we should be dealing with such poor drainage. Councillor Johnston added, I am very concerned about the condition of this garden and the impact this is having on residents in the area, particularly from a health perspective. Phil Tidridge, City Council Environmental Health Officer, said the council was trying to pressure Southern Water into action but had no legal options. He said, we would expect Southern Water to be doing something when this is reported here, but we have no statutory ability to require action from them as they are exempt from our legislation. We can only act by pestering them and acting as community advocates. A Southern Water spokesman said it had used CCTV cameras to survey the sewers and would update customers to the nature of the problem once it reviews the footage. The spokesman added, we sympathise with all those affected by this unpleasant problem. The previous incident was caused by a large number of wipes, which had caused a blockage. Our sewers were not designed to carry wipes or any other non-biodegradable items such as nappies and sanitary products. These should not be flushed down the toilet. They should be disposed of in the bin, and we urge all customers to do this.
Bishop backs new bill on metal thefts. Two Church of England bishops are calling on MPs to support the Scrap Metal Dealers Bill after scores of lead thefts across Hampshire, Dorset and Wiltshire. The metal theft epidemic has hit churches, war memorials, schools, rail and utility services and even hospitals. Some of the worst affected churches have been in the Winchester and Salisbury dioceses, with scores of claims on insurance policies. Bishops are supporting senior Conservative backbencher Richard Ottaway's Scrap Metal Dealers Bill, which has its remaining stages in the House of Commons today, Friday, and seeks to license all scrap metal dealers, verify the identity of those selling metal, and for all cashless transactions to be recorded. The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, said, I would urge as many MPs as have interest in the preservation of not only our national heritage, but also the community bonds which churches strengthen to support the bill. The Right Reverend Nicholas Holton, the Bishop of Salisbury, said one church in his diocese had suffered 8 separate break-ins.
Graduation excitement. It will be remembered as one of the proudest moments of their lives. Thousands of students at the University of Winchester have been graduating this week after years of hard work. The buzz of excitement could be felt throughout the city centre as mortarboards and gowns flooded the high street, as did the tears of happy parents and families. Honorary graduates this year include Olympic equestrian gold medalist Peter Charles and musician Carl Barrett of the Libertines.
Nigel back on the road for the Rifles. An ex-serviceman who last year made a timely trek in tribute to injured soldiers is to repeat his feat in the opposite direction. Nigel Hosking made his way from Winchester to Romsey on Armistice Day last year, setting off at the 2-minute silence. Now a year on, ex-Royal Green Jacket Rifleman Nigel will set off from Romsey this Sunday, November the 11th, aiming to get to Winchester in time for the 2-minute silence as the nation remembers its war dead at 11 a.m. The 53-year-old's challenge, entitled Romsey 2, Winchester 4, Rifleman, The Return Journey, will see him route march, a mixture of jogging and walking, the 11 miles in military kit to raise cash for the Rifles Care for Casualties appeal. The father of five, who served with the Royal Green Jackets in Northern Ireland, Cyprus and Gibraltar in the mid-70s, is now a prison officer, having also worked as a paramedic for the Hampshire Ambulance Service. The Rifles Care for Casualties appeal helps soldiers injured in military operations and provides family support. To sponsor Nigel, who lives in Eastleigh, or find out more, call 07971 634 216. That is 07971 634 216. Or log on to justgiving.com/Nigel-Hoskin. H-O-S-K-I-N-G.
A welcome for new UK citizens. With King Arthur's Round Table looming large, it was a fitting backdrop for a ceremony welcoming new citizens to the United Kingdom. Winchester's Great Hall hosted a special ceremony with a Jubilee theme where Hampshire residents from Russia, Australia, Ghana, USA, the Philippines, Jamaica, and Malaysia pledged their allegiance to the Queen. The ceremony also marked the registration service's 175th birthday. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Ken Thornburgh, said, "Hampshire welcomes over 1,000 citizens to the UK every year, and these ceremonies celebrate the significance of becoming a British national. In this special ceremony, to mark the anniversary of civil registration, it has been wonderful to provide our new citizens with a taste of a true British street party in the same year as the Queen's Diamond Jubilee." There were 36 people there to complete the final stage of becoming British. Originally from America, Kelly Booth, whose husband is a serving British soldier, has been in the UK for 9 years and lives at Worthy Down. She said, "Our daughters have dual nationality, so I was the only one not British. My eldest one is very excited that now I am too." Also taking British citizenship was 35-year-old Su Fien Ung of Sussex Street. Miss Ung, who came to England from the Far East 10 years ago to study, works in Winchester as a quantity surveyor. She said, "It was very important for me to be here. I have wanted to be a citizen for a long time, and I'm proud to be British."
New Style Mattress is a winner for patients. A new potentially life-saving mattress designed by a hospital fire safety officer could soon be rolled out across the NHS. Steve Tremarco, fire safety officer at Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover hospitals, came up with the idea for a mattress with inbuilt safety features. It means patients can be strapped to their mattresses and dragged to safety in the event of a fire without being moved to other equipment. This makes evacuation quicker and saves the trust money and space needed to buy and store special chairs to transfer patients. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke Hospital, is now applying for a patent for the mattress. The fire at the RHCH last December saw dozens of patients having to be evacuated as a blaze ripped through the MRI scanner unit. Mr. Tremarco collaborated with hospital suppliers Direct Healthcare Services to test different prototypes and bring the mattress to production. He even negotiated a deal to get Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust a share of the profits from the sale of each Dynaform Mercury fire evacuation mattress to other healthcare organisations. Health chiefs say the proceeds will be reinvested in local healthcare services. The new mattresses, which cost about £195 each, just £35 more than a standard mattress, have already been bought for 800 beds across the trust. Mr. Tremarco said, "It was a lot of work for 12 months, but it's brilliant to see the finished product and how well received it has been." Hampshire Trust Chief Nurse Donna Green said, "We are very excited about this new mattress, which could have significant cost and safety benefits for healthcare organisations across the world." Mr. Tremarco received a WOW Award for innovation at the launch of the mattress from the Trust's Council of Governors.
Community library to open. A new library is set to open on a Winchester estate early in the new year. The Stanmore Community Library at the Carroll Centre replaces the County Council-run library on Wavell Way that fell victim to cuts this year. Council leader Ken Thornber will officially open the library at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, January the 21st, before pupils from Stanmore Primary School become the first to use the new facility.
Pop bands herald start of Christmas activities. Christmas festivities. Winchester will be bathed in festive cheer next week when the city's Christmas lights are switched on. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, will get the Yuletide festivities underway next Thursday, November the 15th, by turning on the lights at 6 p.m. Councillor Pearson will be joined on stage by the cast of this year's theatre royal pantomime, Aladdin. Entertainment will also come from rock band The Hoosiers, who had chart success in 2007 with their number one album, The Trick to Life. They will be supported by Steve Craddock and Andy Bennett of Britpop band Ocean Colour Scene and rising star singer L. James. Winchester University Choir and Integra 8 Dance will also be performing, and organisers Winchester Business Improvement District, known as BID, have also changed the layout of the stage to ensure more people can come to the event after a record 7,000 turned up last year. Amy McCartan, BID Managing and Marketing Director and Manager, said, "We are delighted that this year we have got some great bands to keep the crowd entertained during the Christmas lights switch-on event. The stage will be put up in the Broadway across the road from the Guildhall to Subway, rather than along the side of the road as before. It means there will be more space for visitors to gather up the high street to see the entertainment. There is also a chance for a head start on Christmas shopping, with festive market stalls open throughout the event, selling food, crafts and toys. The following week will see the return of the traditional Christmas market on Thursday, November the 22nd. It begins with the annual lantern parade from the Great Hall at 6 p.m, moving down the High Street to the Cathedral grounds. The market in Cathedral Close is one of Winchester's biggest Christmas attractions, with around 350,000 visitors expected. It features a variety of stalls and will be open daily from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Sunday to Wednesday, and until 7:30 p.m. on Thursdays to Saturdays until December the 23rd. The open-air ice rink at the Cathedral also returns on November the 22nd and remains until January the 6th.
Pupils are conquering heroes. Children in Year 6 at Stockbridge Primary School organised and ran an annual Conquer Championship. Families spent a weekend searching for the best conkers possible, as almost all children in the school signed up for the first round. Emma Jeffries, head teacher, said, "We are a rural village school and Conkers is a classic playground game. It's important that we allow children the chance to play these traditional games and manage health and safety appropriately, so that children learn how to manage risks and keep themselves safe later in life." And this piece is accompanied by a photograph which certainly brings back memories. There are nine very smart, cheerful children from the school in their red jumpers, standing looking at the camera, all holding a string, on the end of which, of course, is a large, plump conker.
Council used its snooping powers more than 40 times. Undercover surveillance methods used by trading standards. Undercover officers from Hampshire County Council have used controversial snooping powers 42 times over the past 2 years. Trading standards wanted to check for evidence of car clocking, fly tipping, fake goods and shops suspected of selling cigarettes or alcohol to the under-18s. In one case, they were inquiring into disposal of dead farm animals. The Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, RIPA 2000, was originally intended to combat terrorism and serious crime, but it gives councils the right to place residents and businesses under surveillance, trace telephone and email accounts, and even send staff on covert missions. The council's use of the RIPA Act fell from 27 occasions in 2010-11 to 15 in 2011-12. Secret surveillance operations were mostly used to catch rogue traders suspected of selling counterfeit goods. From this month, the law will change to stop councils using RIPA powers without a magistrate's approval. RIPA investigations over the last 2 years have led to 15 prosecutions, 17 written warnings, 3 verbal cautions, and the seizure of fake goods worth a total £77,300. Council leader Ken Thornber said the county had a careful approach to the use of its RIPA powers, and trading standard officers welcomed the extra control. Councillor Thornber said Hampshire County Council is committed to putting local people first and will use every possible measure to catch rogue traders, doorstep criminals and scam artists who prey on elderly or vulnerable residents. Figures show officials carried out direct surveillance operations on 13 occasions between April 2010 and March 2012. This includes secret filming of people. The spying powers were used to investigate premises suspected of selling alcohol or cigarettes to under-18s. Other cases involved people banned from keeping farm animals suspected of having livestock. So-called covert human intelligence sources were used 26 times solely to investigate the sale of counterfeit goods, for example, at markets, car boot sales and over the internet. According to a council report, this involves officials secretly forming a relationship with an individual or business to gain evidence of offences. And 2 applications were made to telecommunication companies to trace phone numbers and email accounts last year. They related to investigations of second-hand car dealers suspected of reducing the mileage on vehicles to boost their price and disposal of dead farm animals. The council was commending for using its power sparingly yet to good effect for residents after an inspection by a government watchdog in November 2011, according to a report to the Audit Committee. Officials from Winchester City Council used secret surveillance just once over the last 2 years to investigate thefts from a car park ticket machine.
Are restaurants in crisis? A quarter of Winchester's restaurants could close within a year, according to a new survey, just weeks after a similar study said pubs were threatened. Insolvency trade body R3 claimed 27% of city eateries are at risk of failure next year. Nick Keekley, chairman of R3's Southern Committee, said, "While the figures may seem to spell doom and gloom, particularly following the news that over a third of Minchester's pubs and bars are at risk, there's no reason for restaurateurs to think all hope is lost." R3's survey on pubs, which said 41% could close within a year, was downplayed by Winchester publicans as crazy. Likewise, Winchester restaurateurs are disputing this survey. David Nicholson, owner of Michelin star-winning The Black Rat, said, "I cannot see how they can possibly get these statistics because no one knows anything about restaurant figures. No one knows anything about my restaurant. There's no way they can know my figures. I wouldn't call it scaremongering, but frankly, anything could happen in the next year. 80% of restaurants could go bankrupt next year, but will they? I don't think so. He added the quality of the city's restaurants would keep bringing customers in. Mr. Nicholson said, if Winchester continues bringing in better restaurants, then it will become a centre for excellence for food, and I think we have the potential to do that. Doug Sutherland, one of the managers at the Chesil Rectory, which also won a Michelin star, agreed, I just cannot see that happening. It certainly wouldn't apply to us. It would take something catastrophic to happen. Restaurants are facing challenges at the moment, but there is quality in Winchester. Chris Turner, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, also criticised the survey. He said, our informal feedback says that most restaurants are doing well in the circumstances. The same survey found 36% at risk in Southampton, 35% in Basingstoke, and 48% in Portsmouth.
Mobile home row goes up in smoke. A woman involved in a bitter planning dispute has torched a mobile home at the centre of the wrangle. Sharon May set fire to the mobile home on her alpaca farm in Ham Green, Sparsholt, after being ordered to remove it by Winchester City Council by November the 16th. Mrs. May, who did not have planning permission for the mobile home, learned it would cost her £2,000 to have it removed, so decided to set it ablaze. She said, I was left with no other choice, as it would cost too much to remove each unit, and I would have had to remove all my fencing too. I tried selling it, but was told it was too old, so burning it was the only viable option. It was very upsetting. I was burning my house and I was in tears. I don't know what's going to happen to me now. I'm staying with my family in Winnell at the moment, but I'm speaking to the council about being moved into a flat. Although the fire was controlled, Hampshire Fire and Rescue was called to the blaze by a neighbour on Monday night. Watch manager Chris Roper said two pumps from Winchester attended. We took action as the fire was way out of control, he said, and it was potentially threatening trees and there were horses nearby. A council spokesman said, we will check it out this week. It looks as though the original breach has ceased, but we will investigate whether the demolition has created an untidy site, which would be a planning breach. Mrs. May confirmed she would remove the wreckage as soon as possible. She has recently separated from her husband, Michael Lee, who was fined by magistrates in August for ignoring an enforcement notice after installing the home without permission. It was first ordered to be removed by February this year, but subsequent council inspections showed it was still there. In August, Mr. Lee argued in court that he needed the home to run the alpaca farm, but a government inspector had already ruled there was no justification for it. Mrs. May also pleaded guilty to breaching the enforcement notice at Basingstoke Magistrates Court last month and was fined £600 and ordered to pay £400 costs.
M3 southbound overnight closures. The southbound carriageway of the M3 near Winchester will be closed for two nights next week for resurfacing work between Junction 7, Basingstoke and 9, Winnell, on Monday, Tuesday, November the 12th and 13th. The closures will be between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. with diversions signposted.
Project helped charity help more homeless. A £47,000 project has helped Winchester Church's night shelter improve its services, its annual general meeting heard. The charity has been upgrading its Drury Street hostel over the past year and is seeing positive results, according to directors. Sarah Lloyd, chairman of the directors, said, our building project saw us able to expand our bed places, have a new IT area, change office equipment, and completely update our facilities. We have been able to concentrate our support work and help to prepare and equip our guests to move on and enable them to build up their independence and social networks. Manager Michelle Price added, "It's made a big difference having two extra beds, and we have been full 90% of the time, which is absolutely excellent." Despite the improvements, the shelter had turned away 439 guests last year, around three times its total visitors, because it didn't have enough room. But the shelter was able to move 100 people on to new homes, with 53 entering supported housing, 16 into private rental homes, and 31 returning home or living with friends and family. Only 7 guests were asked to leave, while 8 were taken into custody. Financially, the charity enjoyed a good year, generating a profit of around £37,000.
Award for Photographer. A Hampshire Chronicle's press photographer has been named Best in London and the South in a prestigious regional media awards. Chris Morehouse, who also works for sister titles The Daily Echo and Rumsey Advertiser, beat off strong competition in the EDF Energy-sponsored awards held at the Amex Stadium in Brighton last Thursday. The awards recognise editorial excellence across print, broadcast and online platforms.
New venture gives that fuzzy feeling. Two young business people have given a talk about their start-up of their ethical business in Winchester. Hannah and Andy Mintram launched Fuzzy, and that's spelled F-U-Z-Z-I, in Parchment Street last year, and spoke at the annual meeting of the Winchester Fair Trade Network about their first year selling local, fair trade and sustainable goods. Initially, Hannah and Andy ran a series of market stalls selling fairly traded and eco-friendly goods, but eventually were able to take and stock the Parchment Street shop through personal loans from friends. They aim to break even, including the payment of a salary, and to use any surplus to aid community projects. Already they allow local groups to use the shop premises out of hours. They stock food, organic and fairly traded wherever possible, and a range of gifts and clothing. They work with local producers, many of whom have not worked with a shop before because they cannot produce the required volume and regularity. During their first year, they have increased their range, often acting on customer recommendation or requests. Not everything has worked. They tried selling fresh organic vegetables, but didn't have sufficient turnover for this to be sustainable. They now have some volunteer helpers, which frees Hannah up to promote the shop. It has been a difficult year to set up a new business, but they certainly have the drive and determination to continue and succeed. Asked why they had changed the name Fuzzy, Hannah told us the whole idea gave her a fuzzy feeling and made her feel happy inside. That feeling is shared by many visiting the shop.
Sammy is inspired. A Winchester boy emulated his Olympic heroes by completing a charity race. 8-year-old Samuel, or Sammy Roberts, was inspired to take part in the Great South Run mini-race in Portsmouth last month. He raised £220 for the Catholic Agency for Overseas Development, known as CAFID, after completing the 1.5-kilometre course. Sammy, pictured below, a pupil at St Peter's Catholic Primary School, said he was happy to complete the race and wanted to take part because he enjoys running. He said, "I'm quite good at long-distance running, and when I watched the Olympics on TV, I wanted to have a go at this race. I have running club every Friday at school, and I go out running at the weekends. Anything active I do helps, like swimming and tennis." Linda Mussel, CAFOD manager from Hampshire, said, "It is really inspiring to see young people putting their faith into action and using their talents to make a difference and help the work of CAFID's partners around the world." And there is a picture of a very proudly smiling Sammy holding up his medal that he won for running the race.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, our copy and dispatch team, and our studio preparation team. And thank you to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye. And do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label into the wallet, please ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.